1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10.
House, please come to order. Under the Uniform Joint Rules of the Alaska Legislature, President of the Senate presides over joint sessions. My pleasure at this time to turn the gavel over to Senate President John Rader.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker Malone. Joint session will come to order. Senator Coletta.
Mr. President, I move an ask unanimous consent to the roll call vote that the Senate be waived and all senators be shown as present.
Is there any objection? Hearing none, it's ordered. Representative Miller.
Mr. President, I'll ask unanimous consent that the roll call of the House be waived and all members be shown as present.
Is there any objection? Hearing none, it's ordered. It gives me great pleasure to note and the presence of and introduce to the House and Senate today a person that you all know, the First Lady of the state of Alaska. Usually we introduce, it seems, people by saying the wife of so-and-so, so we might turn it around in recognition of changing times and changing circumstances and changing awareness. It is a great pleasure to note the presence of, and let me introduce to you, Bella Hammond, whose husband will shortly be addressing us. Appoint Senator Huber and Representative Hagen to escort the governor to the chambers. Bill Rhodes. Representative Hagen apparently is unavailable at the moment. Mr. Rhodes, would you undertake that duty, please? Representative Rhodes. The joint session will stand at ease.
Almost. When do you start this, huh?
The joint session will come to order. And circumstances and awareness, let me introduce to you the governor of the state of Alaska, the husband of Bella Hammond, Jay Hammond.
Thank you very much. Thank you, Bella. In my state of the state message, I pretty much confined comment on the condition of the state to assessments made by others. I did so in hope that such would confine charges of blatant politics to only those blatantly political. I'm certainly glad it worked. In my State of the State address, I also gave my interpretation of messages conveyed through the public forum. Today, I will address the means by which those messages may be translated into political action. Limiting that translation, of course, is increased awareness that we simply do not have the financial resources necessary to do all things for all people all at once. 3 years ago, I dug up data confirming suspicions that Alaska had sailed far into potentially dangerous financial waters. Yet to turn the wheel or trim the sail would inevitably prompt charges that we were less concerned with people problems than with balanced books. Thus, I hoped I had misread the charts and that those with more financial knowledge than myself could show me where I'd erred. Instead, one after another, acknowledged those concerns. To a shrewder politician than myself, perhaps there might have been some small temptation to ignore the danger signals, the temptation to continue the past practice of simply injecting more, quote, one time only, oil dollars into government, rather than holding to the level that the people would permit government to tax them. After all, we would likely have plenty of those one-time-only oil dollars to get past my tenure in this office. Why not let some unsuspecting future governor take the heat? Meanwhile, need another 1,000 bodies on the payroll, sell another oil lease. Need to fund more benefits for state employees, up the severance tax. At the same time, make points with an unsuspecting public by reducing other taxes and expanding people programs, thereby demonstrating that one's compassion transcended one's concern for money. But the basic issue boils down to this. Do we say no upon occasion now, or do we destine our children to a future in which no may be the only answer? Of course, such concerns are easily distorted by opponents who charge gleefully that failure to fund fully some of the public's wants reflects blatant unconcern for public needs. Small wonder if few choose to play target to such charges. So long as the public can be kept confused, then there are stacks of oil dollars behind which to duck. Why expose oneself unduly? Yet having once unearthed the evidence, I simply could not in good conscience do other than take the dramatic actions I deemed necessary, though they might cost points politically. Despite assertions by some special interests that my concerns for finances are based on myths and thus should not be heeded, apparently those concerns are now shared by many, and the tough actions necessary to address them just may be acceptable to most. If so, there should be ample time to take corrective action. Of course, corrective action will likely not be taken unless the public sentiment permits. Last year, I said expansion of governmental services beyond the budgetary level set by prudence would require other revenues than simply one-time-only oil dollars. That, of course, was like handing you a gun, butt first, pointed at my head. By exceeding that budgetary level and not providing other revenues, you compelled me to pull that trigger some 30 million times. Concluding such was politically suicidal. I was heartened to hear at many public forums that most wanted to cut government growth, even if it meant vetoing new programs for which new ongoing revenues were not provided. Apparently, the public recognizes more clearly than some think the necessity for curbing new programs which would increase our day-to-day reliance upon non-renewable resource wealth, which someday will be gone. Certainly, the dangers of such dependency was made dramatically clear in the wake of the Pump Station 8 breakdown and the vagaries of oil pipeline tariffs. Tomorrow, you will consider overriding vetoes. While I would much prefer to work in concert with the legislature in prioritizing programs when prudence dictates that all should not be accommodated, I will do so on my own if necessary. Last year, I deemed it necessary. For even with almost $30 million vetoed from that budget, we will be spending $85 million more than income. Moreover, of the $844 million we will have spent, more than half will be those one-time-only oil dollars. Since veto overrides would but aggravate that further, I urge you instead to restructure my fiscal 1979 proposals under a mutually agreeable budget ceiling to accommodate those programs you deem of such importance as to warrant override consideration. In that regard, I am pleased that last session, in recognition of the need for sound fiscal planning, you passed legislation requiring that a budgetary ceiling allocated by service categories be set up by the 45th day. Such should reduce dramatically the need for future veto override considerations. Of course, all this talk of high finance and fiscal responsibility means little to the average citizen. It's how we use the dollars which we have that is important. Government's only reason for existence, after all, is to provide services to the people. Meaningful government is a public health nurse in Bethel, the state trooper in the Eagle River area, the homemaker aide helping in the home of some elderly Alaskan, a new state ferry in Southeastern, or a road maintenance crew in Anchorage or Fairbanks. Good government is simply people helping people. Thus, it's not easy to pull back on the funding for such services. When we are compelled to do so, it's not because of unconcern for school children, the destitute, the alcoholic, or the elderly. It's simply recognition that unless we build a solid financial base beneath the programs which we structure now, they'll likely slump in rubble sometime in the future. Make no mistake, I believe the future of this state is glowing, and that the gloom and doom predictions of some fear merchants can come true only if we bow to political expediency and special interest pressure. On the other hand, optimistic bravado may make gleaming campaign copy, but it tends to blind us at a time when never as before must we see clearly if we are to shape the sort of future with which we can be pleased and of which we can be proud. Such can be accomplished only through government, which provides us with much needed human services, creates a better way of life for all Alaskans, and yet is lodged on solid economic and environmental ground. To help till that ground, we suggest using seed monies from the Renewable Resource Fund. Accordingly, I propose that of that fund's prospective FY79 $18 million total, we plant $10 million in fisheries, agriculture, hydroelectric development, and efforts to expedite land conveyance. While these projects may require some initial subsidy if they're to flower, we can structure either loan or lease schedules to assure reasonable returns to most Alaskans who do not profit directly from those programs. The appropriation bill I'll introduce totals $879.3 million. However, my total general fund financial plan would amount to $914.8 million when adjusted for all anticipated future special appropriations, supplementals, and costs of new legislation. We wish everything to be laid upon the table. This financial plan can be funded from an estimated $928.5 million total in general fund revenues from all sources. Included in our budget are 342 new full-time positions. Of these, 100 are court system employees, most going from part-time to full-time status. 18 are obligated for operations of new fish hatcheries, and 13 for the new state jail in Nome. 14 are for state troopers, and 7 provide for increased permit issuance and land disposal capability. Another 80 or so are funded by the federal government. This represents a 3.9% increase in state employees over last year, and is by far the lowest request made by a governor in 12 years. I'm pleased that this administration has, for each succeeding year, reduced the percentage increase in employees over the year before, despite the demands of a rapidly expanding population. The greatest budget increase would go to local communities through grants, hopefully to alleviate the burden on the property taxpayer. To slow the growth of state bureaucracy, we hope to shift as much funding as we can to the local level, through revenue sharing and school aid, so that the people can determine, as close to home as possible, how their funds are spent. In that regard, I will propose amendments to the school construction bill submitted last year. These would provide that the level of state assistance for school construction rise from 50% to 80%. However, state assistance should be confined to legitimate basic needs of school districts and not include just anything a district wants. Current practice serves to encourage overbuilding, siphons most of our limited dollars to the more affluent districts, and penalizes those with inadequate tax bases. Of my total budget, $19.7 million is programmed for general fund capital projects. These projects would range from school renovations at Gungignac to small boat harbor improvements at Kluwak. Such projects would impact about 50 Alaskan communities. However, $2.9 million of this package would expand the Alaska Home Finance Corporation and thus could impact Alaskans anywhere. Incidentally, since initiation of the mortgage insurance program by this administration, mortgages obtained through the corporation have helped about 5,000 Alaskan families secure lower interest loans for homes. This program has spurred construction and served Alaskan homebuyers well. With the expansion I propose, this program could represent collective savings to Alaskan homebuyers of some $7 million annually. Now, this is exactly the type of healthy growth this administration ardently supports. While the $2.8 million I'm proposing in small boat harbor improvements is about $1 million more than was taken in by the new water fuel tax, I wish to underscore my belief that we should be willing to help first those most willing to help themselves, if able, when we simply do not have money from appropriate sources to help everyone. My total financial plan for FY79, when compared with the total anticipated FY78 plan, including supplementals, represents a 6.7% increase. However, when compared to similar recurring costs, it represents about a 12.5% increase. Either way you figure it, this is by far the lowest percentage increase proposed by any governor in an election year. Moreover, this budget embodies a significant reduction of that dangerous dependency upon principal instead of income for funding day-to-day operational expenses. That dependency would drop about 6%. Given the opportunity, I assure you we'll reduce that further. However, despite such restraints, our budget yet provides improved people programs, and after all, that's what government should be all about. Nearly half the budget I propose would go into education. Most is for assistance directly to municipal school districts, each attendance area in the bush, and the University of Alaska. I've also included first-year funding for matching the $6 million educational telecommunication program. Such could provide much improved library services, special instructions, and modern educational practices to the isolated student. Also included next year is the high school competency test program. A further expansion of community schools, increased skill center capability, and expanded adult education. In this budget, I wish to beef up training to assure Alaskans are prepared when jobs become available. Such a program is a key element in local hire. In that regard, I'm urging a $110,000 supplemental for local hire. The legislature's $200,000 reduction of my last year's budget request sorely limited the operation of local hire offices and processing of local hire cards. This was most unfortunate in view of the subsequent Supreme Court ruling, which substantially validated our local hire statutes. Our budget also provides improved services for employment of the handicapped. The Crisis Center for Women in Anchorage is funded for a full year of operation. The Homemakers Program, designed to give our elderly citizens the option of staying home rather than entering a Pioneer's home or nursing home, will increase by 115%. In next year's budget for a total of $1 million. Provide more jobs for Alaskans in fisheries, I'll be proposing that $200,000 be used for bottom fish development programs. In the delivery of social services, I've placed emphasis on regional and local participation in development of such programs. We now have underway an effort to simplify and speed up delivery of services to Alaskans who meet a more carefully monitored determination of need, whereby those eligible for services may be more simply and rapidly accommodated. One objective we're striving for is to minimize need for institutionalization of children. We want to rely on the family to heal social wounds whenever possible. Thus, we will continue to promote such through subsidized adoption of children, increases in the foster home program, and an alternative home program when temporary separation between parent and child is absolutely necessary. Of course, the highest priority of any budget should be to help Alaskans achieve happy, healthy, lengthy lives. Such requires that we start early. Thus, my budget will include significant efforts in encouraging responsible family planning and improving prenatal care. While infant mortality in some areas has been extremely high in prior years, it clearly is improving. Our school-age children now rank number one in the nation in immunization against communicable disease. Some unfortunate Alaskans are, of course, too poor to meet spiraling health care costs, much less the occasional catastrophic illness that can wipe out the largest family nest egg. Alaska's efforts in this program are deemed the envy of most states, even though the program is but 2 years old. My budget continues a strong effort in this area. In order to retain our favorable bond marketing position, I've been advised we should not exceed a bond package of about $275 million. The bond proposals I will submit amount to about $240 million. The following is a breakdown of those proposals. $70 million for rural schools, $2.2 million for the Skill Center, total of $18 million for the University of Alaska to include vocational technical facilities, $6.1 million mostly for the Sitka Hospital, $1.6 million to parks, $18.5 million for water and sewer grants to local governments, $20.2 million fish and game enhancement projects, $2.7 million for military affairs to provide armories and Anchorage and Kotzebue, $33 million in justice bonds for correctional and public safety facilities, $10.3 million for harbors and Fairbanks flood control, and $60 million for transportation. Of this, $10 million would go for local service roads and trails. Another item accommodated my total budget plan includes adequate funding for a range of options related to the haul road. My recommendations on this matter will be presented to you shortly. Recognition of our dangerous dependency upon one-time only lease and bonus monies for funding state government spurred efforts to create a constitutionally sound permanent fund. I believe as much such oil money as is not required for capital construction should be placed within the fund. Only by so doing is it likely will curb the unhealthy growth of government. To initiate such wholesome practice, I propose that we place $10 million of our expected surplus into the permanent fund. Nothing could do more to demonstrate our firm commitment to a sound Alaskan future than establishing a healthy habit which those who may supplant us will find difficult to break. Thank you. Any further business to come before the joint session? Senator Coletta.
Mr. President, I move an unanimous consent that the joint session adjourn.
Is there any objection? Hearing none, and so ordered.
Thank you. House, please stand at ease.
We'll just transfer you that position.
Order. There may be some further announcements before adjournment of the House today. Before those are made, there is one special committee which the House had in operation last year. I'd like to reappoint at this time. The Marine Highway Oversight Committee, consisting of Representative Freeman, Chairman, Representative Duncan, Representative Eliason, Representative Gardner, Representative Haugen, Representative Loveseth, Representative Miller, Representative Rode, and Representative Snyder. It has been suggested to me that due to the popularity of that committee, we should call it the Marine Highway Overkill Committee. However, the name will remain the same. Are there further announcements to come before the House? Representative Urien.
I think there is time, so there will be a brief Republican caucus.
Representative Miller.
Speaker, if there are no further announcements, I'll ask unanimous consent this body to stand in adjournment until 10 a.m. tomorrow morning.
Hearing no objection, House is adjourned.